glories, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga.
All glories to Sri Srila
Prabhupada, Mahal Vishnu Parai, Stai Udeshu. I don't know if we have been observing that time-honored tradition
of opening this class with everyone chanting, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I think that we weren't doing that because we wanted to establish clearly that this is a course, not a class in competition with the class over there. But still, Bhagavatam itself says that we should open reading and discussion of the great Bhagavat Mahapurana in this way. So we must do it. Maharaj, you have the mace, you have the questions.
Yes. Some of them, we need some help. So here's what. There are very few references to Sukadeva Goswami's biography in Srila Prabhupada's books. Some things are unclear, such as how and why he became an impersonalist and at which point he studied Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva. Where can these descriptions be found? You can shed any light on that, how you...
Well, basically, as far as what I could say, the parampara in the line of Srila Prabhupada, understanding of Shukadeva Goswami is what we find in Srila Prabhupada's books. There is a purport this question is just coming up now, and I don't remember. I think it may be in the ninth canto, I'm not sure. But there is a purport where Srila Prabhupada does mention, I seem to remember, if it's not Srila Prabhupada, then it might be Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati or Bhaktivinoda Thakur. See, answering this kind of question would require some little research, actually, to get it really technically correct. But at least I can say with confidence that from a very bona fide source, if not Prabhupada's own purports, then within our line, that Sukadeva Goswami manifested a Maya form of himself when his father, as we read, his father was running after him when he took sannyas upon just after taking birth. And this Shukadev, then he expanded a Maya form of himself who returned and took up the duties that his father wanted, went through the reformatory process, samskaras and everything. And so he is described, that Maya Shukadev is described in other Puranas. His deeds. So, but that is not the same as this Shukadev, who continued on and then arrived at the bank of the Ganga where Prikshit Maharaj was, and there recited the Srimad Bhagavatam. So why, the question was also, why did he become an impersonalist?
Yeah, means how he was an impersonalist.
How? Well, Shuka, as you know, means parrot. And from the Goswami Granta, the revelations of the six Goswamis, and you often see this in the paintings of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, that above the divine couple there are two parrots, Shuka and Shara. One is male, one is female. And the male parrot, Shukadev, takes the side of Krishna. The female takes the side of Radharani. And they discuss, because They speak. All living entities in all the creatures in Goloka Vrindavan speak, but especially as we know in this world, parrots have that particular ability to speak. And recently I was even reading that although scientists used to think that parrots were just mimicking sounds that they would hear, now there's more recent evidence that parrots actually are able to understand language to some degree or other, human language, and they respond accordingly. At least some tests have shown this. So they're quite intelligent birds. So that, we're talking about the parrots of this world. What to speak of the parrots of Goloka Vrindavan. So being parrots, as I mean, I think everyone who is reasonably familiar with Srila Prabhupada's books, what rasa would that be in relationship to Krishna? Parrot. Can someone tell me?
Neutral.
Shantara. Well, thing is that in Goloka Vrindavan there is nothing, there's no neutrality. There's no Shanta Rasa in sense of neutrality. Actually, Goloka Vrindavan is the place of Madhura Rasa. It is inundated by Madhura Rasa. All of the stations of devotees in Goloka Vrindavan are actually drinking the nectar of the Madhura Rasa. But they assist the divine couple's rasika pastimes in different ways. So the gopis, the sakis, Srimati Radharani's assistants, they are directly assisting her in her amorous pastimes with the Lord. And in fact, she is, as Prabhupada said this is very intimate and confidential, but Prabhupada himself declared this, so I can just repeat it, that out of gratitude to them, sometimes Radharani is arranging that Krishna will meet with one of her girlfriends and engage in amorous pastimes with her. So, yes, the gopis are most involved in the Madhura exchange. But it becomes very wonderfully esoteric, actually, when one considers what's really going on in Goloka Vrindavan. We know that the sakas, the friends of Krishna, the boyfriends, they're also involved in the Madhura Rasa in this sense, that they meet the gopis because the gopis have brothers who are Krishna's friends. And so brother and sister can meet. And in this way, arrangements are made for what's going to happen in the evening. And this, the gopis, through the, their brothers, tell Krishna where they would like to meet that evening for amorous pastimes. And the gopas are bringing those messages and bringing Krishna's reply back and forth. So the gopas have this friendly relationship with Krishna, but the whole point of that relationship is also the Madhura Bhava, you see. And then, more confidentially, the fact is that, you know, in the Leela of Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis, we all know this Leela, we all know that place on the bank of the Jamuna in Vrindavan where this happened, and there is the deity. I'm not sure, is that the real location?
Don't say that it's not. It was just set up like that for making money. The real place is way upstream
because it wouldn't be so close to, you know, because the place where the girls would bathe is very obscure.
Yeah. So anyway, this is confidential. But Krishna was not alone when he did that. The gopas were also there. His cowherd friends were also there in the bushes.
And they were really young ones.
Yeah, okay. But they were there. They were watching. And then you have that Balaram has a gopi form, Lord Balaram has a gopi form, Ananga Manjari, who is Radharani's best friend, and all the cowherd boys also, his expansions, also have their gopi forms. And so you see the rasa is rasa, it doesn't actually, it moves in its own way. We are given what's called a schema of the rasa to help us understand the basic divisions. But rasa is actually kutila. Kutila means it moves like a snake. You see? It moves in its own way, crooked. So, in any case, we can talk about Shantarasa in Goloka Vrindavan, but it is not like the Shantarasa in Vaikuntha, it is not the Shantarasa of the Brahmanandis. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his explanation of the Atmarama verse, he describes, if you read it carefully, 13 levels of Atmarama, or it is the same as Shanta, beginning with the Mayavadi, more or less, and ending with the Super Soul Realized Yogi. And in between, there's 11 stages. But that is nothing to do, really, with the Shantaras as manifest in Goloka Vrindavan. Because even in that rasa, so Shuka and Sara were speaking of, their only topic of discussion is a loving relationship of Radha and Krishna. Wherever Radha and Krishna may go in the forest, Shuka and Sara follow, and they're in the tree above, watching everything and talking, discussing with one another everything that's going on. You see, nothing is hidden from them. And this is the only thing they're talking about. And Shuka takes Krishna's side, and Sara takes Radharani's side. And so one can only imagine the nectar that is being exchanged between these two parrots. So Shukadev Goswami is the incarnation of the same Shuka. So he came to this world with the mission of speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, because obviously in his spiritual swarup he is most excellent speaker of Bhagavat Tattva, and particularly the most intimate aspects of Bhagavat Tattva. Who else could do? That's why all the sages, including even Srila Vyasadeva, who are all the sages of this world, even the four Kumaras, who are the Lord's Jnana Shakti, but they're all manifest out of the Lord's Shushti Stiti Pralaya Lila, his Lila of creation, maintenance, and destruction. So the four Kumaras being great sages, this is in terms of this material world. They are the wisest, the most learned sages. Lord Shiva, similarly, great sage. Lord Brahma, great sage. Greatest of Brahmanas. But they cannot be compared to Shukadev Goswami. They cannot be compared to Shukadev, who is Shuka of the spiritual world. You read in the Brahma Samhita about how after long, long meditation, one full day of Brahma's time, which is 4,300,000,000 years of our time, he came to some realization, it's explained, that he is the maidservant of Krishna, which indicates, maidservant means some type of, as Maharaj always says, we are all prakriti. So some in relationship to Krishna. He is female. But then a Brahma Sanghita does go on to say the purport by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati that not everything, he could not realize everything through his meditation. But some things he could understand, at least that he is the maidservant, he is eternally related to the Lord, and that he has a duty to act as creator. So, in other words, his spiritual position in the intimate pastimes of the Lord in the spiritual world was still obscured. And therefore, from time to time, this is explained summarized in the 11th canto. There's a purport in the 11th canto which very nicely traces out throughout the whole Bhagavatam the times when Brahma, although Krishna makes a promise to Brahma, it's in the second canto. We read about this promise that you will never become bewildered. We find even afterwards he did become bewildered. And all the times he became bewildered as Brahma are summed up in one purport in the 11th canto. And this is because he is... Well, as Prabhupada said, someone was raising this question. How is it if Brahma is the first acharya after Krishna in our sampradaya? How is it that he could become lusty after his own daughter? This is one example of Brahma becoming bewildered. And Prabhupada's reply was that whatever he may be, he is acharya. That's all Prabhupada would say. So he is qualified enough as a fully realized, he's fully realized jiva. Jiva has 78% potency of the Lord. 78% of the spiritual potency of Krishna is reflected in the jiva. So he is a fully realized jiva. And so therefore, he is competent to act as acharya. He is competent that all Vedic knowledge will come through him. But it is not necessarily true that he has full realization of everything that is coming through him. And in fact, it is mentioned that some, in this, all the universes, some Brahmas, they have their taste, because all Brahmas must speak the karma shastras, the jnana shastras, and the upasana shastras. These are three divisions of knowledge. But the Brahmas, individually in different universes, some may have taste for the karma shastras. You know, they'll speak the jnana shastra and upasana or worship bhakti shastras, worshipful shastras. Without changing anything, it will be parampara in that sense. But they themselves may be drawn to the karma shastras. Others may be drawn to the jnana shastras. That means they have a special taste for that and they get realization. They like that. They are actually, they have that tendency to be jnanis. And some may be devotees. But in any case, they are not fully realized devotees. Unless they get special blessings, just like when Brahma comes as Srila Haridas Thakur, then he has to give up completely the upadhi of being the leader, the grandfather of the demigods, the leading Brahmana of the whole universe, the one to whom all the demigods go whenever there's a problem. And then he goes to Svetadvip. And only he has the vision of the form of the Lord. The others are only able to see the jyoti, the effulgence of the Lord when he appears. He can see through the effulgence and see the form of Lord Narayan. He is a devotee of Lord Narayan, Mahapurush. So he is not fully realized unless he gets, then he may come as Srila Haridas Thakur, giving up all those upadhis and entering into Chaitanya Lila and becoming Namacharya. Then by special blessings he can attain the full Krishna Bhakti. So Shukadev Goswami is so far beyond the sages of this world who are actually manifestations, like Ramaji is Rajuguna avatar of Krishna. Four Kumaras are the Lord's own Jnana Shakti, but that is in terms of his Leela of creation. Shukadeva Goswami is sage in terms of Krishna's own intimate Nitya Leela, Madhura Leela in Goloka Vrindavan. That is his qualification to speak. So therefore, all the other sages who are present, Maharaj Parikshit sat down to hear in his last 7 days what is the ultimate goal of life, when Shukadeva appeared, they all stood up, because immediately understanding his position so is inestimably so far beyond theirs. Even Vyasadeva, just like, you know, Lord Shiva is the son of Brahma, but who is greater? Lord Shiva is much more powerful than Brahma, because Brahma is a jiva, and Shiva is his own tattva. Shiva, Prabhupada said, actually Shiva is simply Mahavishnu. Prabhupada once said, same to same, they are the same. But for a particular purpose, when Mahavishnu is glancing at the universe to awaken his achit shakti, then that form of Vishnu with his eyes open, looking at Durga Devi, then that is the same as Sadashiva. You see. Yet this Shiva, he appears as the son of Brahma. So similarly, Shukadeva Goswami appeared as the son of Vyasadeva, but was inestimably much more spiritually advanced. So why he appeared in this world as Brahmavadi, within the womb as Brahmavadi, is simply that entering into this world, his identity as Shuka in the spiritual world was temporarily suspended. Just like Arjuna is Nitya Parshada of Krishna. He's always with Krishna, never separate. He's fully Krishna conscious, but for a particular purpose, for the benefit of the whole world, Krishna caused his knowledge to be covered so that the Gita could be spoken. Krishna does this with his pure devotees. We already read this explanation concerning Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev, similarly, a devotee, if you remember from the verses we gave you, one of the first expressions of prema in the whole Bhagavatam, prema rasa, is uttered by Grandfather Bhishma, as according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Queen Kunti also. So the first canto is the Bhagavata Udaya. It is like the rising of the sun of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But already there you have some beautiful rays coming from the 10th canto, already appearing in the first canto, coming from the mouth of Grandfather Bhishmadev, who's a Kshatriya, you see. That's very unexpected. We expect the Madhura to be expressed by gopis, but it's Grandfather Bhishmadev was expressing this prema mahima, as categorized by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that's why I said, don't be fooled. We cannot be fooled by external appearances and think, oh, Grandfather Bhishma must be in such and such rasa because he's appeared as Kshatriya. We should not speculate on that. Anyway, so Grandfather Bhishma Dev, such a great, great, great devotee, I was talking about Arjuna, such a great, great, great devotee of the Lord. This is in the purport about Bhishma Dev. Srila Prabhupada is explaining that just like Bhishma Dev, who is eternal associate of the Lord, but in the Mahabharata, he ultimately becomes the enemy of Krishna. But this is also out of the rasa. This is so deep and so mysterious and yet so nectarian, difficult for us to understand. We get these categories of rasas and relationships to help us. It's called a schema. Schema means, in modern psychology, a simplified form, diagram, system of organization to help you understand a matter that ultimately is beyond your understanding. But you get a grasp on it through this schema. So similarly, what we learn about rasa tattva at our level is like that. The rasa is an unlimited ocean. And it flows, the currents of rasa flow together, combine and recombine, and it is kutila, it is crooked. It is not according to our preconceptions. So, just as Grandfather Bhishma, who had such an intimate rasa with Krishna, appeared to be the enemy of Krishna, fighting Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, just as Arjuna, an eternal associate of Krishna, seemed to be covered by ignorance. So similarly, Shuka, who is the most qualified to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam of all sages, when he was within the womb of his mother, he appeared to be simply Brahman realized, because his spiritual identity was by the Lord put into suspense. Now this, by the way, is a very, very important distinction. This comes out now. Very, very important distinction between Vaishnava philosophy and Mayavadi philosophy. Because the Mayavadis, they say that consciousness is nirvikara. This is a tenet of Mayavad philosophy. Consciousness cannot be changed. It cannot be transformed. So therefore, aham brahmasmi means I am the all-pervading one Brahman. And that I am thinking, I am, you know, this body, this identity right now. That is simply maya, that has nothing to do with my consciousness, that is something else, another thing, maya. And maya in traditional Shankara philosophy is not the energy of Brahman. It is not the Shakti of Brahman. Brahman has no Shakti in Shankara's teachings. So this is the perfect irony of this Advaita Vedanta, that ultimately they're not talking about oneness. They're talking about two things. There is Brahman, which is Chetana, consciousness, Nirvikara, unchangeable, always Brahman. It's always Brahman. And then there is Maya. And when you ask a Mayavadi, well, what is this Maya then? You're talking about two things. And they say, that is anirvichaniya. Is the term they use. It cannot be expressed in words. This is a question that cannot be answered. In other words, that's where their philosophy falls apart. That's the point where you see the defect. They claim to be Advaitists, but actually they're dualists. You see, because they're talking about something else, Maya. And this, whether, if you ask them, does it exist? Does it have reality? They may say, according to how you ask the question, they may say yes or no. You see? This is what Prabhupada meant by word juggling. They dodge the question. Yes, it has reality. So if it has reality, then it means it's not to. No, because it has no reality. You see, it is only maya, illusion. But you just said it had reality. You see, they will just juggle words, go back and forth, back and forth. So anyway, the point is that for Mayavadi's consciousness, that means our consciousness is nirvikara, that means it cannot be changed. We are always Brahman. The only thing is that we have to realize it by somehow dispelling this maya, whatever it is. And they give such examples like, you have, if at night you're asleep and dreaming, that's like being in maya. And then you dream of a tiger that attacks you. So these are the terrible experiences that the Brahman is having while under the influence of maya. And then you suddenly wake up. A tiger has jumped out in your dream, and you wake up, and then you realize, oh, there's no tiger. I wasn't in a jungle. That's all illusion, you see. I'm me, aham brahmasmi, I'm Brahman. So they say that's the purpose of my, it's just some kind of dream, hallucination, it's real, it's not real. Around and round they go. And it's all bogus, nonsense. Ultimately it makes no sense at all philosophically. So the Vaishnavas, we say, the Baladev Vidyabhusana in his Govinda Bhashya clearly says that consciousness is vikaraka. It can be transformed. But who can transform consciousness? Only Krishna. And this is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a verse which describes that the reason the living entity has become like vidbuja. You know this term, vidbuja? You must have heard this. It means like stool-eating hog. You see, this is in reference to rasa. That the hogs, you don't see so many hogs running around here in Mayapur. When you go to Vrindavan, they're the sanitation department, the street cleaning department. Sometimes, you know, people pass stool and there's certain fields assigned for passing stool and you have to take a stick because they're so efficient that they're already cleaning while the stool is still coming out of your body. So you have to beat them off before you finish your business. Very eager they are to eat stool because they have rasa for that, they have taste. Now how is it possible that they could have taste for eating stool? And that is because, this verse declares, they're cursed by the Lord. The actual term is used. I haven't memorized this verse, but we will be talking about it in our psychology class upcoming. One of the key verses. That actually they have been cursed by the Lord to be attracted to such things. This is their rasa, their sense of taste, which they should be finding at Krishna's lotus feet, has been twisted, perverted, and only Krishna can do this. Therefore it is said, they're cursed by the Lord. And therefore they're seeking rasa and things like that. You see? And so all living entities who come to this material world are more or less vidbujaha, stool-eating hogs. Anyone who is pursuing this jada prakriti, this dead matter, and trying to enjoy it, just like the romance movies, you know, there's these films and they're great, and out of these films there comes the great stories of romances that happen between the stars, who make these movies, like recently two big stars, they made a movie called Mr. and Mrs. Smith. They were, both had been married to others, but by making this movie, they became Mr. and Mrs. In reality, they divorced their others, or the lady had already been divorced. And they're both two of the top Hollywood stars. And so romance came out of their playing this in this movie, and they divorced their partners and became married themselves. So this is the romance in the material world, but what is it? I remember one of my godbrothers, he used to give this example many, many years ago, and I was very much taken with it. He said, if you collect stool into a plastic bag and squeeze it, you see, fondly, is it very nice? Warm stool? It's warm and soft, and you squeeze it against yourself. The bag is closed tightly so you can't smell anything. You can even perfume the bag. You can squeeze it and hug it. You see? What is that? It's the same thing. Vidbuja. Pleasure of stool-eating hogs. You see? But this, why are we in such an abominable situation? Because of being cursed by the Lord. The Lord has cursed us from within the heart. Because of our aparadic attitude towards Him. We, rather than wanting to serve Him, want to be Him, so He has cursed us. And this is where we are seeking. Rasu Vaisaha. He is that rasa. Whatever rasa we are seeking in drug, sex, and rock and roll, as they say, or anything else, it is actually Krishna. That's why one of my old mentors in the early days of Krishna consciousness, a very fascinating devotee named Gaurhari Prabhu, who I haven't seen for many years, but it was a great pleasure to get to know him when I was a very new devotee, because he was a real... He met Prabhupada at the Morning Star Farm in San Francisco in 1967. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Tom, and Vishnujana Maharaj, what was his name? I forgot his first name. Mark, yeah, Tom, Mark. They were living in a tree together. And Gaurhari Prabhu at that time, Herbie, he was taking care of the vegetable garden. So these were like real original hippies, you know, Haight-Ashbury freaks who had left the city and gone into this farm. And when Prabhupada came to visit, he was invited to come to the Morning Star Farm. Herbie was standing there hoeing his vegetables in the sun, standing there stark naked. And Prabhupada walked by. And Herbie had seen Srila Prabhupada before at some spiritual gathering and had noticed that Prabhupada was vegetarian. They hadn't spoken, but he'd noticed that Prabhupada, he'd kind of been a little fascinated seeing Prabhupada was vegetarian, only taking grapes. And Prabhupada was also sitting as far as away as he could from some Buddhists who were attending, because Prabhupada didn't want to be mixed with Buddhists. Prabhupada wanted everyone to know that I am not, because superficially, you know, especially since this is the first time anyone saw a Vaishnava sannyasi, superficially, they might think he was a Buddhist monk. Herbie noticed this, that Prabhupada deliberately sat as far as away from the Buddhists as he could, and he was only taking grapes. They served all kinds of nonsense, but he was only taking a few grapes, very delicately popping them in his mouth. So Herbie had seen Srila Prabhupada before, so he's standing there, stark naked with a hoe in his hand, and he goes, "Hiya, Swami!" And Prabhupada stopped, as he would do. He was walking along, and he stopped, and he turned, and he looked at Herbie very gravely, this penetrating look. I remember when I was initiated by Prabhupada, he also gave me such a look, you know, that just went right through the body, you know, the eyes, into the mind, into the intellect, through the false ego, right to the soul. He'd look right at your soul. So he gave him such a look for a long time. Just held him, fixed him in his gaze. And then he said, "Don't you remember what you're supposed to be doing?" And then he walked on. And later, Herbie, after that meeting, he started to remember what he was supposed to be doing to be a devotee. A friend of his became a devotee. And Herbie wanted himself to become a devotee, but he had one problem, and that was he had a strong taste for drinking wine. He used to go through 2-3 bottles of wine a day. And he used to tell his friend, who actually left with Prabhupada that same day from the Morning Star Farm, this, he said, his friend, who was initiated as Devananda later on, he said, "This is what I've been waiting for." And he left with Prabhupada and went to San Francisco Temple and became Brahmachari there. So they used to meet sometimes when Herbie would come to San Francisco. Herbie said, "In those days I had hair down to here and a mustache and a little goatee," he said, "just like the devil." And he would sit on the street, you know, the curb of the street, you know, sidewalk. Sit on the sidewalk with his feet in the street with a bottle of wine. Just sit there, drinking. And sometimes his friend would come by, shining effulgent brahmachari, and say, "Hey, Herbie, come on. When are you going to shape up and become devotee of the Lord? You know you want to be a devotee. You know. You met Srila Prabhupada." In those days they called him Swamiji. "You've met Swamiji. Swamiji has said this to you. When are you going to start doing what you're supposed to be doing?" And Herbie would say, "I cannot give up this wine." And so his friend said, "Well, Swamiji said that Krishna is the rasa of everything. And rasavai, What is that he says in Gita? I am the taste of water. Yes. So, rasoham, I am the taste of water. So, Swamiji has said in one lecture that basically anything according to Veda, the element apsu, apa, water, means anything liquid. So that includes wine too. Anything liquid is apsu. So you should offer your wine to Krishna. And then his friend gave him a picture of Krishna. He said, before you drink your wine, just offer it to Krishna. And so Gauri used to say, so immediately, same day, I started to do that. I'd pour a glass of wine, I'd put in front of a picture of Krishna, I'd bow down, and I don't know if he actually learned the Sanskrit prayers, but he would pray, make some prayer to Krishna, please accept this, and then he would drink the wine. He said, within 2 weeks, I was living in the temple. I gave it all up and became devotee. So that's why Jiva Goswami, in one of his commentaries, in the Sandarbhas, he's speaking of this, comparing a Pakka Brahmana, Pakka Vipra, with good birth, good japt, gotra, who is expert in the sadkarmas that Vipra should do, who is suchi. All those qualities are there, but he's not a Vaishnava. And then he compares him to Svapacha, which means dog-eater. You know, the class, Chandala class, Svapacha. And Rupa Goswami specifically, in his explanation, because there's this verse, what is that? Sad Karma Nipnovi Pro Mantra Chanta Visharda Vaishnava Guru Nasyad Vaishnava Svapacha Guru. So, one may be such a Brahmana, but if he's not a Vaishnava, you should not take him as Guru. But if a Svapacha is a Vaishnava, then accept him as Guru. Jiva Goswami adds one, what's called Kadasil. Kadasil in legal language means one additional fact, one piece of information that is very, very important in presenting the case. He says, even if that Svapacha is still engaged in eating dogs, not just Svapacha, that he was born as a dog eater and then, you know, shaved up and became vegetarian, but even if he's still eating dogs, if he's a Vaishnava, you may accept him as Guru, rather than accept this qualified Brahmana who's not a devotee. You'd be better off accepting this dog-eating devotee as your Guru than this fully qualified Brahmana who's not a devotee. You'll make more advancement in your spiritual life. So, the point of all this, I'm no longer sure right now.
You're trying to explain how Sukadeva appeared as a impersonalist.
Yeah. So, yeah, the point was about rasa. So actually we become cursed by the Lord. Yes, the rasa to become an elevated brahmana, but not a devotee. Or the rasa to be an alcoholic, the rasa to be a stool-eating hog. This is all the result of Paramatma's dissatisfaction with us. In a sense, he's dissatisfied with us because we're not serving us. That dissatisfied we see Lord Nityananda when he seized Raghunath Das Goswami before he was actually Raghunath Das Goswami at the, what is that, Panihati festival when they serve the yogurt. So he was hosting that. And Lord Nityananda came and he grabbed Raghunath, who was directing the festival on behalf of his wealthy father and uncle of the Majumdar family, was it?
Majumdar.
Yes, Majumdar family. They would host this for the Vaishnavas. And he seized their son and said, "You are a thief! You're a thief! Why are you holding back this bhakti, this great treasure of bhakti that you have in your heart? Why are you keeping it from the Lord?" You see? So Lord Nityananda is the original guru, Adi Guru, and who guru appears in the heart as Chaitanya Guru, Paramatma. So Paramatma in that sense becomes displeased with us because we're thieves. We are thieves when we do not give that treasure that each jiva has. You see, each of us has a treasure, a gem, a jewel. Bhakti, the potentiality to be Krishna's devotees. Because we all have this rati, this attraction to something, and is meant for Krishna. You see, rati, there's even a similarity of word, rati, ratna. Ratna means jewel. So, rati means attraction. So in our hearts, we all have this gem that Krishna holds so valuable that he says to Durvasa, without my devotees, I cannot enjoy Vaikuntha. I cannot even enjoy the company of my goddess, my wife, goddess Shri. All these become unpalatable to me without my devotees. So such a treasure every jiva has in his heart. So when we refuse to give this, just like what happened to the father of Satyabhama, what was his name? Satyajit. Yes, Satyajit Maharaj. He would not give. Someone was speaking of this. The Shamantaka jewel over to Krishna, to Ugrasena at Krishna's request. It was a very bad result for him. He was murdered by one envious person. So similarly then, Goddess Kali, Kala Shishiksha, the time factor, with her 10 arms, she comes to murder us. This is what happens. This is how we get caught up in creation, because the angry goddess Kali was just a transformation of the Daivi Shakti, the Bhakti Shakti, transformed. She punishes us. And that's why Prabhupada in one early lecture, he said, actually, Maya Devi and the Krishna Consciousness Movement both have the same purpose in this world. Only Maya Devi, from her side, is kicking the living entity. You rascal. You don't serve Krishna, therefore I will beat you. I will kick you on your head. Kick you on your face. And the devotees are chanting, Hare Krishna, come on and serve Krishna. So both purposes are the same. Maya is doing it, you know, stick and carrot sometimes is example of you. Krishna Consciousness Movement is the carrot, the nice thing for the donkey, the ass. We are Buddha. See? So you dangle a carrot in front of him, the ass will come forward. But if he's slow to come forward, you give him some wax on the backside. Bam, bam, bam. That's Maya. Move, rascal. See? Or I'll just keep beating you. So we are rascals. So Krishna, the original point is that in Vaishnava philosophy, consciousness is vikaraka. It can be transformed. It can be changed. Mayavadis do not accept that. They say, you are Brahman right now. Right now you are God. Right now you are God. You are Brahman. You see, only you have forgotten. But in Vaishnava philosophy, we never say, right now you are God in any case. We say, right now you are eternal jiva, eternal part and parcel of God, but your consciousness has been transformed. Your taste, your rasa has been transformed by the will of the Lord, because as Prabhupada says, Prabhupada once explained in a conversation, there is matter, there is spirit, and then there is Krishna, who's the controller of both. You cannot just say Krishna is spiritual. Krishna is even beyond spirit. Because he is the master of both of these shaktis. One is called chit-shakti, the other achit-shakti, and he's in full control. So he can transform the jiva and turn him into a stool-eating hog who thinks his satisfaction is eating something nasty, doing nasty activities. My God, I spoke. Look at how long I spoke. I'm sorry, Maharaj. I'm always... Oh, okay. Thank you.
kind of connected similarly.
Another question. Narad Muni is taking part in Krishna's pastimes, and even he becomes a gopi, but still his Ishtadev is Narayana. Why is that?
You want to answer? I think you should answer. I talk so much.
We can try. We also see in the pastimes that Dhanishta, she is also a gopi, but she's in the mood of servitor. So being a gopi doesn't mean that it is specifically conjugal, rasa. So the point is that he's serving Narayana. He's trying to assist in those pastimes in some way because he sees the greatness of the Lord. So even whatever the position, then that mood still stays. So that's not a difficulty. The main is you have these two focuses, is that affection for Krishna because he's God, and affection for Krishna just because you like his qualities. So then both these are valid. Both angles are valid, both perspectives. But of the two, then it's said that of Krishna because of his qualities, that is the more pleasing to Krishna. But both are valid. So here then Narad Muni, then that is his position. It's also then, if you look at it from the other angle of that with Krishna, everything is manifest, like we see in the universal form and all, that Krishna is, all elements are within his body. So his front, his chest is religion, but his back is irreligion. So because he's God, then everything is non-different than him. But there's what pleases him, and there's what's not so pleasing. So whatever there is because he is the Supreme Lord, there is the element of those who understand that and relate to him like that. It's just natural, because if you're God, you're going to have associates that know you are. And if you're Krishna in Vrindavan, you have associates that deal with you in that way. It means this, whatever his mentality, there's always a matching internal potency and expansions of that internal potency for whatever particular mood that Krishna has. So in that Vaikuntha mood, then Lakshmi is, of course, the internal potency. But of then the devotees, then Narad Muni is the prominent. So that's it's a natural position. So because that is his position, he can appreciate all other devotees in their relationship with the Lord. But he will still have his preference. You know, it's just like the mother has her child, and she appreciates any other mother interacting with their children and all this, and they see how nice it is. And it may be they have more facility, or the interaction is more intimate, or any of those things. It's all appreciated, but still, when she thinks of interacting, she thinks of her child. She doesn't think of the other person's child. Does that make any sense? Yeah. Does that answer?
And also there's, again, this point that rasa is kutila. It is crooked. So Narada Muni, I mentioned before, in Vrindavan, he's there as Madhu Mangal, the same Narada. But he's Krishna's coward friend. Also, at I've just forgotten that place where Narada bathed. It's just near Radhakund.
Narada Kund.
Is it Narada Kund? Where he became gopi.
Kusum Sarovar.
Ah, yes, Kusum Sarovar. So we see Narada, even sometimes he's entering the Rasa Lila in gopi form, as Lord Shiva does too. But, so this means that they take on the form of gopi, Narada Muni, Lord Shiva, they experience all the bhavas of the gopis. They know from personal experience everything about the Madhura Rasa, but it is, Narada is, that's why he's called, the example, the best example of Jnana Mishra Bhakta. In this sense, that he is so curious about everything Krishna does. So that's how he enters into the Ras Lila as Gopi. He just wants to see, like Murari Gupta's Vihasya's daughter Sudevi. There's this thing she says. I just want to look. Whatever you're doing, if you're doing something on a computer or you may be doing anything, and she would just come and stand there. And you look at her, what do you want? I just want to look. She stands there for a while, and then she's satisfied and goes away. So like that, Narada Muni, he has such a curiosity about everything Krishna is doing. So he, and by Krishna's grace, he can even enter Ras Lila as a gopi. But he just wants to look. And then he's with Krishna in as Maramangal in the Sakya Ras, seeing what that's like. He's in Vaikuntha Ras, seeing what that's like. He comes to the material world to see what the Lord's doing there, in his different avatars. So that's why he's called, generally that's not recommended, you see, to be a Jnana Mishra Bhakta, that's considered. But for Narada, Narada has Nitya Siddha. So he is the perfect example. This is simply his Bhakti Bhava. He just wants to look at everything Krishna's doing. And Krishna's given him a free pass. He's such a devotee. He's got a free pass. Yeah. Any Leela,
he's the only devotee who crosses all the Leelas.
Yeah, he crosses all the Leelas. Any Loka, anything, Lord Nisringadev, or, you know, all the different. He has like a free pass. He just shows his pass. Oh, it's Narada Muni. Come on, right on. Come in. Such a wonderful devotee. And therefore, he's so prominent in the Bhagavatam because he knows everything. He can give knowledge of everything about Krishna. So therefore, I was reading somewhere recently that he's the most powerful sage. They were describing different sages and saying that's why he's called Deva Rishi, the most powerful of all sages. Of course, we were speaking of Shukadeva before, but again, Narada too, even more powerful than his father, Brahma, is Narada Muni, most powerful of sages, greatest sage, Deva Rishi. So wasn't there supposed to be a presentation by one of the boys? David?
Not today.
Maybe tomorrow?
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
But you wanted to move on to the 12th chapter before, or do you want to do the presentation?
No, if they're ready, it's okay.
Yeah,
if he's ready.
We can make it tomorrow.
All right. So tomorrow one of the, but it'll be the only one?
Yeah.
Okay, there'll be one presentation. Also by one of the boys, and we'll continue with the questions. And also, if we need to cover anything more in this 11th chapter, we'll do that, Maharaj and I, before going on to the 12th chapter. And remember this, just by way of reminding you, the day before Nityananda Trayodasi, I believe the 9th of February, then this class goes into suspension, so as not to so-called be in competition with the classes that will be given by the esteemed GBC men during their meeting. And we'll stay in suspension throughout the whole Gaur Purnima festival until March 20th, something like that.
We'll see, whatever's the convenient first Monday or
okay.
Thursday.
All right. We'll let you know. Also, Maharaj and company, the crew of boys, when?
4th?
Yeah,
this Saturday. This Saturday are going to Ujjain to do a Didi constellation. So that means from the 4th till the 9th, you'll be stuck with me as your teacher alone. So I'm sorry to disappoint you. But Krishna doesn't. Krishna has his own way of doing things. So, thank you very much for attending. And remember also, during the DVC meetings in the afternoon, we will be continuing Bhagavad Katha in the form of a psychology class, the psychology of Srimad Bhagavatam, psychological system drawn from Srimad Bhagavatam, and I will be teaching that with Nitai Goranga Prabhu, who has a BA in psychology, who will both co-teach that class. It will be very interesting. We're going to show you, for example, a film, modern scientific film that will devastate every conception you ever had about your perception having any reality whatsoever. It completely shows that what we perceive with our senses is totally unreal, and therefore you can really have appreciation of the meaning of the word Maya. And we are really in Maya. We are not in touch with anything real through our senses.
One of the stops.
That will start day after well, maybe we'll wait till our boys to return from Ujjain. That may be the best thing.
Maharaj, first available date is the
13th.
Because Nityananda Trayodasi is on a Friday, I think.
Oh yeah, okay, that's best. So then everyone will be back. It's best, because it'll be otherwise very lonely here. Just you and me. I would rather, like, Preeti Vardhan be back, because he can set up the computer for showing the film and these sorts of things. It'll be in the afternoon. We'll let you know. These things still have to be. These are minor details. It'll be very interesting. Very tattvic, very philosophical, but very interesting. Guaranteed. Thank you.
Someone's also asking if there's going to be a fee for the class.
Is it going to be what?
A fee?
Well, that's an interesting question. We'll think about that. I never thought about it.
Maybe for materials.
Well, there is something.